What's going on, everybody? Mark here with CCO's The Science of Fishing. I'm here with Joe Hector from Extreme Kayak Fishing. We're going to talk about everything today, guys. We're going to talk about kayaking inshore, offshore fishing. We're going to talk about getting out there and how to catch fish without a motor.
You've landed on CCO's The Science of Fishing, where passion meets precision. Hold on tight as we dive in. But before we do, we would like to thank Sea Mule and Black Reef Co. for sponsoring this episode.
How'd you get into it, man?
So I'd say in 2007 and 2008, I moved to South Florida from New Jersey, and I had no money. I was going to the Art Institute in Fort Lauderdale. And I just had to get back out there because in Jersey, I had a boat. I was a kid.
Like, what part of Jersey were you from?
South Jersey, by Atlantic City.
Okay.
Exit 74 for all those Jersey guys out there. And I would go, I had a little Mako. So, you know, in Jersey, I can go striper fishing, you know, do all, my dad had a, one of those old egg harbors with like the tuna tower.
Nice.
Like total old school.
Yeah.
So we would go to the canyons. We catch bluefin tuna, all that stuff. Here, when I moved here, pretty quickly I was noticing that these guys were catching fish like a mile offshore. And I just said to myself, like, I can't buy a boat yet. You know, I'm this starving, you know, student, you know, in a dorm. And I'm in an art school. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, you know, how am I gonna do this? I need to catch fish. Now, obviously, you can catch snook, tarpon, all those fish, which I did. But, like, you know, after a while, you just get that itch, and then you see other guys on the media back then, you know, when it was still kind of MySpace-ish.
It was so like, you started back then.
Oh, dude, this is right when like it was like changing. You know what I mean?
Facebook was coming out.
Yeah, and Facebook was there, but people were still kind of doing the MySpace thing and getting with the, you know, through those withdrawals until all the banned stuff started popping up and it changed.
Right.
So we were in that period, and all of a sudden, man, like I saw this video, and this is when I met my wife. We were sitting down in like 2007. In my little apartment, and there was this like Discovery Channel show on those Indian people in the Arctic that would hunt those Nordic those whales with those horns.
Oh,
they got like that one big horn.
Yeah,
and they would get in these like massive canoes, and they would hunt these whales in these canoes and like spear them and all that. Whoa. And then drag them in. It's insane. So I'm watching that, and now my brain is which never shuts off, by the way, is spinning, and I'm like, well, wait a second, I can get probably into one of these kayaks. I could probably get it for like $100 or something and go out there, you know, with my rods and give it a try.
Yeah.
So long story short, I went out there, I caught a mahi, what was it, 30-pound mahi-mahi, like my first time offshore.
How far off were you?
Man, I caught this thing on a, this is the crazier part, I caught this thing on a dead sardine, which was like rotting at the time because it was so hot, and I'm out there like a moron in this, like, it's like noon, and I had this one free line out, you know, that I almost forgot about.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it just starts going, doot-doot-doot, and then I see this massive jump, and I'm like, oh my God. Yeah. So I lost it like twice. Like I started reeling.
Oh, really?
And then he was off. And I'm like, no! And then I'm waiting. And all of a sudden he comes back around, hits it again. He starts taking it. And like a moron again, I pull.
Oh, so you pulled it
again.
I
had a circle hook. Yeah. So I like, which you never do. But I'm just so excited.
Yeah.
So I pulled again. It came off again. But this dude was starving. So he came back around. And he finally took. And I fought him. Brought him up to the kayak, and now he's close to the kayak, and I'm like, you know, his head is like this.
Do you have a gaff on the kayak? Are you ready for this?
So here's the other problem. So I get him up to the kayak, and this is when I first started. So I got like nothing. I ran out of water. I mean, I'm like purple because of the sun, and drenched in sweat. I got nothing. And so, and I have like a shirt I was wearing over my hat because it was so hot. I would dip the shirt in the salt water, you know?
Yeah.
And he's up to the side of the kayak now. So, you know, I heard that they get like green, you know what I mean? When you get them out of the water a little too soon. And I had a treble hook, you know, hanging off the side of it. So I know that treble hook. I don't see it yet because I have them up to the side of the kayak.
Yeah.
So I just say, you know what? Can I curse?
Yeah.
So I say, fuck it. So I just, I dip my hand in there. I bring him up to the side and I grab his gill. Like fingered inside of his gill. Like, cause you're so low to the water.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like, so you can,
you could literally get in there. So I just switched arms and just like got in that gill. Cause I spun him around. So I get him into the, like, he's bigger than I thought.
So now you're manhandling him.
So I bring him into the kayak and the thing, dude, this thing went fucking bonkers. And he's beating the shit out of me. He's hitting my chest.
Are you like holding
on? I have my finger in his gill, which is getting sliced to shit. And
where's the treble hook?
So I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, where's this treble hook? And this thing is going crazy. So I'm like this, trying to hold him, and he's hitting my chest like this to where I'm like, this dude's gonna give me a heart attack. So now I'm starting to panic because I don't know where that treble hook is, and now I have another pain on my arm, so I'm thinking it's pulling. So I just say, you know what, that's it. So I fucking punched him right in the head, and I knocked him out cold.
You stoned him with a punch?
I stoned him with a punch.
Dude, I don't want to mess with you, man.
Oh, man. So I knocked him out. So he's done. And then I had a little knife on board, so I ended up just, like, slicing him. And then this is the crazier part. And this is, like, my first monster fish here.
Yeah.
So I slice him, like, on his belly. And now, all of a sudden, all these worms come out of him. Like, these, like, parasitic worms. They fly all over me. So now I'm, like, throwing these worms off me. So it was chaotic. But long story short, that was my introduction to catching a monster fish in the extreme way. Offshore kayak fishing. I'm more known for wahoo.
I've seen a few pictures of you catching some wahoo. So most of the guys down here are planer fishing or high speed trolling. What's your secret to wahoo fishing on the kayak?
So honestly, like, I wouldn't say there was really ever a secret. I think it was that nobody at the time, you know, we're talking 2007, 2008, you know, they weren't going out there targeting wahoo. I think a lot of people just thought, which is weird to me, just thought it couldn't be done. Like when I did my first sailfish tournament, right? The first Sailfish Smackdown, which is like over 10 years ago now, which is insane. I had a spy that I hired that would go on all these message boards to let me know what people were saying.
Really?
And this is back when, in kayak fishing, when those message boards like Florida Sportsman, stuff like that, they were real popular. So a lot of these guys would go on there. So I had a guy that would go on there and let me know, you know, what people were talking about.
So scouting for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it would help. So when I posted that first flyer, everybody was like, this dude's nuts. No one's going to fish it. People can't catch sailfish on a kayak. People aren't doing it consistently enough. He won't even get a first place winner. It'll be done before it even begins. So, and that year, I'm kind of jumping around, but that year was a big year because that was also the year we did our first international Bahamas tournament as well, the Battle in the Bahamas. But going back to the wahoo thing, I would go out there and I would use, you know, I like to fish stealthy, so I don't use heavy gear. So I would go out there with my spinner and a medium heavy rod. And I would use, let's see, like a 40-pound mono. I never use swivels, so I would connect that to about 6 to 12 inches of wire.
Yeah.
And then that would be connected to a 3-0 J-hook. And then I would also have a small treble hanging off the back.
A stinger rig like that.
Yeah. And the interesting thing, first of all, if you're going to use the stinger rig, you have to make sure, because it's about swimming natural, right?
Yeah.
Excuse me. So when you're fishing like this, it's all about presentation, okay? That's key. And what I would do is I would let that stinger hang freely, and I would make it a little longer if I had a pilchard.
Yeah.
If I had a goggle eye, I would take that that stinger, and I would hook it into the side, but you have to make sure you have enough slack. Because if you don't, the swim will fish unnaturally.
Yeah.
and your presentation will be off, and you won't get a bite. And if you do, it'll be pretty lucky. So what I would do is, a lot of, back then, I would use a lot of pilchard. This is before I really knew much about gox.
Do you have a little live well on the
Yeah,
canal?
I would use a 5-gallon bucket with a little dinky aerator. And, you know,
like your bass fishing, peacock bass fishing with shiners.
Yeah, I'm out there, you know, all just gung-ho. And I would put, if it was pilchard, I'd put a dozen in there. They'd be okay. If it was gogs, I would put 5 in there. And if I was going to use a couple more, I would put another aerator on there.
Yeah.
But so I would go out and, like I said, with that rig, I would put a pilchard on there, hook them through the nose, and I would free line them out, and then a
on top of a wreck, or like on top of structure. Or
so this is what's interesting. Back then, I didn't have a.
There's no Seymour. There's. Nothing.
I didn't have a GPS unit for the kayak. I didn't have any kind of like techie gear. What I would do is I would just follow in the morning those huge charter boats, so they would be going out, and I would see where they were fishing. So I would just go to that area real early. And I would freeline my pilchard out. And what's interesting is most of my wahoo were caught letting my first line out.
Really?
Which is insane.
Are you out there at like first light?
Yeah, first light usually. Okay. If not, maybe a tiny bit later. But I would just let that fish out, and all of a sudden you'd see your line going quick. I tighten her up. And I would say 90% of all the wahoo I've ever caught on the kayak were only hooked by the time I got them into the kayak by the stinger rig.
Really?
Yeah.
The
like
treble.
The throat. A lot of times I would feel the J-hook pop sometimes.
That's scary.
You know, I would put a little pressure.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, I'm not in it to play. Like, I want to get that fish.
Yeah.
And I'm a big component of you go out there, you have a plan, you maximize your plan, and you go home. You know, you don't mess around. I don't like to mess around out there. I've been through lots of different scenarios. I had a water sprout go straight through me one time, literally.
Whoa.
So I, you know, I've seen some crazy stuff. And the thing is, you can't just go home. You know what I mean? Like, you can't just say, okay, you know, I'm done fishing, so I'm going to crank up the engine and just, you know, head back.
You got a paddle.
Dude, you got like a, you know, especially with like the currents and stuff like that, when you're getting these wahoo, and like, I was getting a lot of them in like June, July, August. And, you know, you got a 40-pound wahoo draped over you back then. So, you know, it could take up to 3 hours.
To
get back in.
Wow.
So
do those wahoo pull you around when you hook into them?
Yeah. My biggest one, which is on YouTube, which kind of like set off extreme, that one took me from Pompano Beach past Boca.
It dragged you that far?
Yeah, it dragged me that far.
How big was it, dude?
That one was a 65-pounder.
So that's a big fish, dude. That thing's moving.
Yeah, she was a hog.
Yeah.
And what's funny is when I cut her open, when I finally got back in with the help of one of my buddies, she had a whole blackfin tuna inside of her.
Really?
Yeah.
Dang.
So just like swallowed her whole.
Yeah.
And, you know, those days, you know, you got to look at your surroundings too. You know, you're so low to the water. To me, that's an advantage. And you're out there, so if I see like a school of blackfin tuna or whatever, I'll put her down right away.
Really?
And I'm not going for the blackfin. I know in June, July, August, under that school, there's monster wahoo eating these.
So you'll drop down below the school and see what's going on.
Right, right.
That makes
sense. Like, I had a friend tell me one time, I hooked into like a big blackfin, you know, I'd probably say like 20 pounds. I bring them in. My buddy's like, dude, why are you look so pissed off? I'm like, God damn it, you know? Because I was going for the wahoo, but like most people be happy with a 20-pound blackfin. I'm just like cursing and saying, God damn it, you know?
Because
it like mangled my rig. And that day I didn't bring like a whole bunch with me, so I was all pissed off.
But, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, that's I always would go for wahoo. That was my fish. Mahi-mahi as well, you know, they were a lot of fun. But I think, you know, it's a string of luck combined with, you know, knowledge. And that's the one thing, you know, you can never research too much. And I tell that to people that are fishing my events. And I tell that to people that ask me questions about fishing in general.
Yeah.
You know, knowledge is really power when it comes to kayak fishing.
What would you say is the number one thing, you know, for someone that wants to start kayak fishing offshore?
What's the number one thing?
What's your number one tip to someone that's...
My number one tip is to always, always, always mind your surroundings. That's...
Safety.
That's safety, number one.
Yeah.
You know, listen, when I used to do it back in 2008, 2007, you know, I'm not going to lie. Like, I was like a cowboy, man. I was going out there by myself sometimes.
Yeah.
I would go out there and, you know, it'd be 2 to 5, 3 to 5. So I, dang, you know, I'm in my early mid 20s.
Yeah.
You know, all gung ho. So yeah.
Balls to the walls.
Yeah. Right. And you know, it was a new thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, people were not doing it. I mean, there was only like a select few, like guys like Rob Rodriguez and stuff like that, that were doing it. But you know, there was no social media presence really for them or for anyone really doing it.
Right.
And the only guys that had like a media presence that were doing something like that were in Hawaii. They were called like Aqua Hunters or something like that. And, you know, I actually started talking to Isaac. He was one of the guys that had like a forum there that a lot of people would go on. And
yeah.
I actually had him on one of my podcasts. He was a good guy, but he's a Hawaii guy.
Yeah.
They would go out and catch monster, you know, yellowfin tuna, marlin, but those guys ate everything.
Yeah, they,
you know, and you know, people fish frown to kill upon, you know, billfish and stuff like that.
Right.
But and they would have videos of them like killing these things, stabbing them in the head.
Really?
But they would eat the whole thing.
Yeah, so it was,
use whatever wasn't used.
Right. So they're not just killing to kill; they're killing for sustenance.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. So you know, that's my number one tip though, is when you go out there, you just got to look out to where you're at, what you're doing, who's around you,
right,
what's potentially coming. You know, your head is on a swivel when you're out there. And another very important tip that I'm throwing in there, which is part of the mind your surroundings part.
Yeah.
And I've seen this a million times. A guy will go out and he'll he'll get to his spot, ready to fish, hasn't even started fishing yet. And he turns to go grab a pilchard or a gog, and he takes his eyes off the horizon. And the moment he does that, now you're discombobulated. So he puts his head down to grab bait, and he'll flip.
Really?
Whether a wave hits him, whether it's just him losing balance, whatever.
All the gear's gone.
Everything's gone. Oh, yeah. Whoa, and I've seen it a lot. So just if you're grabbing bait, stuff like that, another tip. And it sounds so easy, but like...
You just got to keep looking ahead of you?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds simple, but... You know, you'll see when you're out there in the heat of the moment sometimes, or let's say you're in a rush, you see a school of fish around you and you want to get that bait out and you're sick of trying to grab it and you want to see it, you know? I mean, you still can, but you just got to mind your surroundings.
Right.
Very important.
Have you been in any sketchy situations out there?
Oh, man, yeah. I mean, there was one time. So I always thought like a waterspout was like a real tornado to where like it would like pick you up and throw you and you're dead. Right.
Right.
So I'm out there, and this was, again, back in, like, 2007 when I first started, and I'm fishing, and I see the storm developing. So I was with my buddy, I think it was Doug Perez, who has a charter business now, Wahoo's Only. He's the man.
Sweet.
Yeah, so it's great to see how he's grown from where we started. And so we were fishing, and... The storm's developing. It's getting worse. You know, we're looking at each other like, you know, this is getting pretty sketchy. I think it's time we head in. So we turn around, and the current was ripping that day. And when I say ripping, I'm saying like 4 knots, man. So like you're trying to go against it, and you're not moving.
Right.
So we're like, let's just beanline it straight in and head straight to shore. So we start going straight in, but obviously, you know, you're still going wherever the current's going. And the storm is just getting closer and closer. And then all of a sudden, you know, Doug is like, dude, there's a funnel. I see a funnel. And I look up and I see the funnel cloud slowly going down. And I'm just like, I don't know what to do. And you know that moment where your heart like gets in your throat and you get that weird feeling in your gut?
Yeah.
That started... You know, that draped over
the
me.
The oh shit moment.
Yeah, like, oh shit, like this could be it. Like I don't there's nothing I can do. And I put on my life vest because I would never wear it. I would always have it to where I can access it. So I put that on and I'm like, dude, we're dead, man. And Doug's looking at me and I'm looking at him and this thing's coming quick, man. I mean, fast. Like,
it's like a water like tornado right just at running at
you. Dude, it's like a literally a tornado's coming right at you. And all of a sudden, and this is so weird, as it's really close, we're feeling electricity. We're feeling energy. You feel this energy. All your hair starts standing up. It's really? The dude, it's the weirdest feeling ever. So if you ever go through a water spout, like, this is what'll happen.
Is this as it's going through
as
you?
As it's going through, yeah. Well, actually, no. I mean, this thing wasn't even hitting us yet. It was close. And yeah. I'm feeling just everything gets kind of calm. And then all of a sudden, dude, it's like, right. But then here's the thing. You lose sight of it because you're in it. You don't know you're in it.
Really?
It's really strange because as it's really close, it's so big. Because everyone always sees them far away.
Yeah.
But when it's there and you're in it.
It's huge problem.
It's like you're in a, like, kind of a rainstorm.
Yeah.
But it's not the feeling you're thinking of like a tornado. It's more of energy, electricity, your hair.
Interesting.
It's the weirdest feeling in the world. I'm sure you can Google it and people will talk about that. And then that was it, man. Like, it hit us. It went through us.
Did it spin anything. You around?
It got, like, choppy for a few seconds. And we got soaked. But, like, and then it was gone. And it went, and we're sitting there, and, like, not a word is said. And we just kind of, like, look at each other.
We're live.
And then we look around, and we go, let's go back in.
You were done for the day.
Like, I'm done.
Yeah.
And we just beamline it back in. We're right. done. And, yeah, I mean, that's my experience with the water. That was probably one of the most scariest, as in seeing something coming, thinking that, oh shit, I'm potentially dead.
What about, like, other boats around you, like these charter boats or whatever? Like, anybody almost hit you? Run you over?
Many times. I think most people that fish offshore in a kayak, they'll have their experience of almost getting hit by a boat. There was a time that I went out and I was with this, my buddy Joel. He was another old timer that would go out and fish off the kayak back in the day.
Yeah.
And we're going out, and it was a dusk run. So it was still light out. We wanted to be in by dark, so it was short. You know what I mean? We're not going too far out. We're staying, like, right around the third reef area, which would be, I don't know. You know the buoys?
Yeah.
It'd be, like, a little bit more past the buoys, like, maybe a mile, maybe half a mile.
Right.
So we're fishing, and all of a sudden, I hear boom, like a loud thump. And then I look over, because we're not that far away from each other.
Yeah.
And I look over, and his face is, like, white. And he goes, dude, something just nailed the bottom of my kayak. Excuse me. And then all of a sudden, again.
What?
Hit him again. He literally came up like this. He goes, dude, what do I do? What do I do? And he's almost in panic mode now.
Like a whale hit him or something? Like, he doesn't know?
Again, like, we don't know exactly what it was. But then I look into my horizon, like, I'd say 15 minutes later. Now, we're beamlining it back in now, so we do it like a U-turn.
Yeah.
And you kind of get that feeling in your gut, like, at any moment, whatever this thing was, first of all, it hit him twice, which means whatever it was pissed off.
Yeah.
And it knows we're there, and it could potentially be right under us. It's that sinking feeling of, like, this thing could just knock me over in 2 seconds. So you're trying to, like, kind of stay as stable as you can while beamlining it back into shore. And I look into my horizon, just, I don't know why, I just look up and I look over a little bit past Joel, and I see this monster brown head. And I can't even explain how big this thing was, but this head came up, and this is now probably, like, it's not that close to him. So whatever it was, I think it bumped him again, maybe with his back or tail, whatever. Maybe he just went after him.
Yeah.
But, dude, if it was that head that I saw come up, it, like, came up and then went back down, made, like, a crash, like a whale almost, and it was gone. But it was a legitimate monster, dude. Like, monster shark. Monster. Jeez. I'm thinking it was a bull.
Yeah.
But it had this brownish tint. I mean, it was
huge. I was going to ask you, do the sharks ever, like, mess with you guys, come smack you guys?
Or, oh, yeah. We've had...
they check you out?
Makos, they'll come, they'll check you out.
You ever bite the kayak?
12-footer. come by. We fed sharks off the kayak with kingfish.
They don't try to eat your, like, kayak or anything?
No, you know, here's the thing. Like, a shark to me is like a dog.
Yeah.
What's interesting about a shark is when you look down at it and it's looking at you, it's looking at you. So, which means that shark is in its brain deciphering that you are not the kayak. It's separate entities, I feel like. Which means they're pretty fucking they're smart.
Yeah.
And so they would look at you. And so, like with a dog, there was one day we had this shark, and he would not leave us alone. And it was a hammerhead. And it wasn't big. It was probably like 7 feet. And it kept messing with us. We couldn't catch any fish because it wouldn't leave us alone. So we had a couple kingfish that we caught early, like little rats. And I remember we were like, well, let's see, you know, if it really is like a dog, you know. So we cut it, and he like threw in the water, whoosh, grabs it. So then we're like, oh, shit. And then it comes around, doesn't attack us, waits.
Playing fetch.
Like, hey, throw me another one. So I'm like, pew. Hey, throw me another one.
Yeah.
Dude, it was the coolest thing ever. Then we got really comfortable with him. We stuck our hand in the water. He comes up, starts grabbing, gives it to him. Would not touch or attack us or anything. It was literally exactly like you would if you had a dog and you were playing fetch or feeding or whatever.
Tug of war.
Same thing. Yeah. Playing. Like, we really legitimately felt like the shark was playing when we were, like, pulling and he would pull back. And
like a dog.
Dude, it was like a dog.
Wow.
So, yeah, some crazy stuff.
So sharks are okay when it comes
sharks
to that.
Sharks are cool, man. You know, I mean, aside from that monster that we saw, that we didn't really, I mean, we saw it, but we don't really know if that was the thing that bumped him.
Yeah.
Whatever did bump him was huge.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll say that.
It was messing with him.
Oh, dude, it was big.
Yeah.
So, and then that's, you know, from doing all that, we have a video on that, us doing that. And then what'll happen is, after all that, when we come in, you know, it's just like one of those things where after a while, it's kind of normal to you.
Yeah.
Going out there, having these experiences, you know, it's just one of those things.
You get acclimated to it.
Yeah, kinda. You really get used to it.
In front of me, I have the Flushmaster by Seemule. This little device simplifies the process for flushing your engines. All it takes is 3 easy steps. Plug the hose into the device, plug the hoses from the device into your motors, and press on. That's all it takes to preserve the longevity of your motors, ensuring 100% clean water is running through them. So if you want to preserve your motors, go to Seemule.com and go pick up a Flushmaster.
That's what kind of led into me doing events and tournaments.
I was going to say, you have what, 4 a year now?
Yeah. Yeah. So
kayak only.
Yeah. Kayaks.
Okay.
Oh, they could go in paddle boards if they want to.
But motorization.
You can go in a raft if you want, like one of those alligator rafts. As long as you don't have a motor, you can fish our events. And so we have the Sailfish Smackdown, which is the nation's only kayak billfish tournament. It's a catch and release.
Okay.
That's January 27th. The stories and pictures and videos we have throughout the years of that has been unbelievable.
Yeah.
Definitely one of my favorites. That one is. Everything takes place on the water, pretty much. So we don't have, like, the big party event on the beach like we would with the Exotic or the biggest one, the Summer Slam.
Yeah.
And then the Exotic is a new tournament. We created that, man, I think 3 years ago now. So, we're going into our 4th one. So it'll be 4 years. And that one is exotics only. Came up with the idea.
What do you mean by exotics?
So Florida, especially in the past 10 years, I'd say, the popularity of peacock bass, clown knife fish, you know, all the cichlids, all that stuff, that type of fishing has gotten so popular, snakeheads, the whole thing.
Yeah.
To where, you know, you look at, like, the lures and all the stuff geared towards them now, the money that it's bringing in at this point now, the tourism that it brings in.
Significant.
Dude, I mean, listen, if you're a guy in, like, Tennessee, you don't have to fly to Africa to go catch peacock bass anymore.
Yeah.
You take a trip to South Florida on freaking Spirit Airline for like $200.
Yeah.
You get a guide.
Go to Lake Ida up in West Palm.
Go to freaking Lake Ida and you're ready to rock, you know? And to be honest, if you go to just anywhere, off 95, you know, you can catch yourself a peacock bass.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's definitely changed since the 90s, right? So I sat down with my team and I said, you know, I want to do something new. I want to, you know, add something to the series. Because, you know, the one thing we've always done is we like to add new stuff to what we're doing. We don't want the same thing all the time.
Yeah.
Which is why we did, like, the Bahamas for 4 years. Added the Sailfish Smackdown, for instance. Stuff like that. So, yeah, we added that tournament, and it's been great ever since. We do that tournament in Lake Ida.
Nice.
And that's going to take place in April.
Okay.
It's always in April, probably late April. We don't have the date yet for that, I believe, but it's coming out soon. And then the final one is the grand finale for the year. That's the SummerSlam. And that one is our big one. You know, we get over 100 guys lined up on the beach for that. We have a big event on the beach with a big stage. We want to make these guys feel like, you know.
It's like a festival,
like,
man.
Like, yeah,
it's
like a party. Big festival party, you know. You want that championship feeling.
Yeah.
So we have the big stage from Pompano Beach, from the city. They've been great to work with. And, you know, I've done that tournament for over a decade, man.
Right.
It's been great. And so, yeah, we've done that one for years. We're going to do 2 SummerSlams again this year. You know, COVID kind of... with that tournament made it rough. We were still able to do one, and then we kind of stuck with one for the past couple years after. So this will be our first year where we're heading to 2.
I got you.
So,
You had the one in the Bahamas though, right? Or do you still, is it still running in the Bahamas?
No, we had a 3-year contract when we started, and then we ended up after the 3 years, we went back into negotiating and I signed another year. I wouldn't sign another 3-year, which was, you know, what's the word? Which was interesting at the discussion.
Well, we talked a little before. You were saying there was some stuff going on, right?
Yeah. So
can you get into that?
Yeah. Yeah. All so right. for those of you that like fish events or do events or whatnot, for those of you that put on events, you'll kind of know what I'm talking about. Maybe not to this extent, but like, you're putting on a show, right?
Yeah.
And as long as people don't know what's really going on behind the scenes, so you have to also be a key act. Like when I do an event, I'm the one that's on stage. Like I'm the face, right? So right. I have the mic. I'm doing the VJing. I'm doing.
You're the MC.
All of it, right?
Director.
A one-man band, pretty much.
Yeah.
My wife does a lot of work on the back end, but when it comes to like visual, there at the event. You know, that's what I'm doing.
You, yeah.
So you have to be a poker face kind of guy. You know
with
what
who,
I mean?
Though? The things, with
the crowd, the people, the people that are fishing the event, especially in a day and age with social media, you know. So, you know, there's things that go on the back end of every event that no one really knows goes on that is potentially negative, positive too, but a lot of negative.
Yeah.
And a lot of fight back and forth, a lot of stuff to put stuff on, to do things a certain way. Maybe someone's not doing their job correctly. Maybe one guy didn't show up. So, you know, people, but you don't get to see that as a customer of mine, which is, that's what you want. You don't want to deal with that shit. So in the Bahamas, when we were negotiating, so we'll start in the beginning. When we negotiated the Bahamas tournament, we did a scout run. Okay. So we went there, the Bahama Tourism Board was the main sponsor, and Nautical Ventures, which is here. They're still a main sponsor of ours, which they've been great for years. But they introduced me to this guy, Earl Miller, that was the head of the Bahamas Tourism Board at the time. Okay, so he says, listen, dude, I love what you're doing. We need something like this in the Bahamas. So I said, okay, you know, we can figure something out.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, well, let's set up a meeting. Let's talk about it. See if we could potentially do it. So we sit down, we have our meeting, and things go pretty well. They made a bunch of promises. For instance, you know, I asked them, hey, what's the bait situation? Oh, it's great. Lots of bait. Okay. Do you guys have like a bait boat that can potentially come and sell bait? Your guy can keep the money. I don't want his money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he's like, yeah, I got a guy, this guy Luther, he can come, he could sell bait, yada yada. And that's just one out of like 1,000 scenarios that I asked them if they could provide, right?
Yeah.
What happens is we have about 5 meetings and I'm like, listen, everything sounds really good, but before I sign this contract, you know, I want to take my team and I want to go there and fish it myself, stay in the resort, which was Flamingo Bay Resort, which is awesome, by the way. And they got this monster pool. I think it's like the biggest pool on the island.
Oh, wow.
So it's in Port Lakaya.
Okay.
So we go there and they're like, yeah, we'll take care of the whole thing. Now, to get there, right, they had this like mini.
Did you kayak fish it?
Oh, yeah.
So you had to bring your kayaks over too.
Oh, dude. Logistical fucking nightmare.
I was going to say, how do you do that? Do you just load a boat with 12 kayaks and run over there? Or?
Let me tell you, man. I'm going to get into that.
So. All right.
Trust me, that's a whole podcast in itself. But,
oh, man.
Oh, dude. So they have this like mini cruise ship, okay? So now we have to negotiate with the owner at the time of this Bohemian Express, I think it was called.
Okay.
So what they do is, let's say you want to go to the Bahamas for like 2 days. Or let's say you want to go there for like 6 hours. You go to Port Everglades, okay, in Fort Lauderdale. You buy a ticket. You go on this fast ferry boat. They shoot off to Port Lakaya. You stay on the island. You hang out. You go right home. So it's potentially, in theory, a great idea, yeah. Okay? What I didn't know was that we were part of their, like, test mice in this whole scenario.
Oh.
Yeah. So we're talking with this guy, and I'm saying, okay, now, you guys don't have the kayaks on this island, so I have to find a way to get our anglers that fish this thing, their kayak, their gear, over to Port Lakaya, okay?
Right.
So I negotiate with the owner of that company, the Express, and we figure out a way to where they will put the kayaks in the ship underneath, we'll be on top, we shoot over, we unload. Now here comes the other fun part.
Where do they go?
Who's going to pick them up? Because guess what? When you show up, it's about an hour to the resort. Yeah.
So you need trucks now to
so now we need trucks. Over. Okay. Oh, jeez.
And you did this for 3 years?
Dude, four. I signed another year contract.
Oh, my goodness.
When it was done. And we filled up that resort. We filled it up to where it bled into another resort.
Whoa.
That third year. So long story short, so I say, listen, I need to do this run with my team to make sure we can do this. Fine. All right, we'll do it. Okay. So before any of that happens, I'm still trying to figure out with the truck situation. I'm like, dude, do you have drivers? Listen, I made very good friends, I would say for a lifetime in the these Bohemians doing this event. Okay.
Yeah.
They're great people. But a lot of them that we dealt with were the kind of people to where, let's say you want to go on a charter, okay? And I say to you, I'm Bohemian, okay? And I say, okay, man, this is $500. And you're like, okay, cool. All right, I can do that. And then I'm like, okay, well, how about you give me $100 up front? And then you're like, yeah, I could do that. And then I'll get, and, you know, and then it's 400 after, you know?
Okay. Right.
Bada bing. Psh. And then it's like a half New York Bohemian thing.
Yeah,
I don't know
all how. Good, yeah.
Australian. I don't know what the hell. So, what the hell? It's early. My ADD just kicked in.
No, you're good, dude.
I'm getting like PS, what's that called? PTSD now.
Yeah,
from
dude,
that
you're
event.
Like, I don't want to go back. I don't want to go back.
Oh, God, man. So with that line, so I'm doing the scenario, right?
Yeah.
So now
I give you $100.
You're giving me $100.
Right.
Okay. We're going to do the fishing excursion. Then you're going to give me $400 when it's done.
Right.
Okay.
I'm going to give you $400 after.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Deal.
So, okay. Deal, right? We shake hands. We're good to go, right?
Yep.
Okay. All right. We're good to go. So then guess what happens?
You
show up.
After.
So I say, meet me in the morning at, you know, Rinky Dink Dock, okay? And you're like, yeah, okay, cool. I'll see you there.
All right,
I'll meet you at like 4 a.m. on the dot, okay? All right, I'll see you later, buddy. Boom,
yeah.
I'm out. Next morning comes. You're excited. You're stoked. You got all your stuff ready. You show up at that dock at 4 a.m., right? You know what? You show up at 3:30. You text the guy, hey, bud, you on your way? Nothing. You're like, maybe he's just getting things ready, whatever. No. He never shows up. He took your 100 and just dipped. They don't have the concept of, I feel like a lot of them, when it comes to business, they want that money up front, but they don't really care if they get the whole thing. They just want something.
That 100 is going to last them a lot longer.
Yes.
And so it's like...
And that's the, you know, and here's like the sad part of it, right? Like going there, we also, like on that bus ride, because we also have a bus that would take the anglers from the Bohemian Ferry Express to the resort, right? And like, I remember like when we did the simulation ourselves, it was my first time. Listen, I've been to Mexico. I've seen some pretty down and out places with poverty and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's terrible. But I didn't... I expected to see like poor people there, stuff like that. But what I didn't expect to see that extent of it, and like how that island, do you remember that hurricane that was over them that like decimated it? Dude, nothing was fixed. It was still like
shambles.
Dude, just shambles. And like there's, I don't know if people know this, they have this wild dog there, and like when they're everywhere. And they literally look like a wild dog from, like, Africa. And, bro, like, you'll be, you know, we're driving on this bus, and you're seeing, you know, these wild dogs all over the place.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're just like, what is going on, bro? And, like, you're looking around, there's, you know, people in these shacks that are, like, totally destroyed. And, you know, you sit there, and you're like, oh, my God, you know. Which, in a way, I kind of think that's good to see as well for like our customers that were coming in to be like, hey, listen, you know, like this is real life.
Yeah.
You know, we're not in that.
We're not in cushy,
you know, for people
Florida
who say,
anymore.
You know, America's not free and, you know, I hate America and yada, yada, yada. Well, you know what? Go to the Bahamas and stay outside the gated Americanized communities.
Right.
Like go to the real Bahamas, go to Mexico, go to those places and tell me if you say the same thing. That stuff drives me insane.
Yeah.
Because I've seen it, you
right.
know?
I feel like fishermen are able to, like, when we travel, we see what reality is.
Right.
A lot of these, like...
I agree.
Like, I know in... I forget where... I think it's the DR. When they're blue marlin fishing, those guys will come up to you on the pongas and take your marlin.
Yeah.
Because that's what they need to eat. And you have it on the line and you don't want to kill it. So sometimes those guys will give them beer and money to go away.
Yeah.
But if you don't got anything, that marlin's theirs.
Yeah,
It's just a way of life.
Exactly, dude.
Yeah.
And that scenario actually happened in our Bahamas tournament.
Really?
So, yeah. So I'll rewind. So we did the simulation and the trucks, which we... So we have to bring envelopes of cash. Okay. So
no credit cards there.
No, dude. So all these envelopes are for the different people that we have to pay off to make this thing go. And that's when we learned, you know, we show up there on that first simulation. Guess what? The truck guy doesn't show. So we get off the ship. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, well, what the hell, man? So then with the help of some of the other the Bohemian people that we had there, like Richard and stuff like that, Donna, they worked for the tourism board. They were able to make a couple calls. And, you know, that's another thing about the Bahamas that maybe people don't know. They all know each other.
Yeah.
They're all connected with each other, all of them.
Yeah.
And there's crazy stories on that I've learned as well. So they end up getting a truck. Truck comes. We get in the truck. We did the whole experience. We caught some good fish. We caught a wahoo. We caught, you know. So it was fun. It was a good experience. I was still nervous, because of some of the things that were promised just on that trip that didn't happen. But you know, I figured, listen, we're handing envelopes of cash to these guys. Now they know who we are. They know that we're good on our
money's going to come.
Yeah, on our commitment, and I'm bringing customers that are bringing cash as well. Okay, so I end up meeting Luther, the bait guy.
Yeah.
You know, really good guy, and he ended up, you know, for a couple of years, bailing us out of stuff. Yeah, he was a good guy. So, anyway, now we were able to put on this tournament.
Yeah.
Okay. So the first year, half the trucks show. So what happens? So certain guys getting off the ship have to wait now for like 3-4 hours.
Go back and forth.
Because now we have like one truck when we should have had four. and, you know, do the whole process, okay? Yeah. So, you know, it starts off like that. Then we find out from Luther the bait guy that he actually doesn't have live bait. That he's got to go catch grunts and whatever he can get to provide these guys. So now you have my customer sitting there holding, like, you know, $100 bills saying, give me that grunt. Like, that's where this is headed. You know, first place is 10 grand, bro.
Yeah.
So you got to do what you got to do.
Spend it to make it.
Yeah. And then here's the other problem. What happens? These guys, so they take the trip. But these trucker guys are, like, you know, loading these kayaks, just breaking certain things, you know, and just, dude, throwing them in the truck. So then we learned that, like, we got to have, like, four of our guys go with these truckers because they're breaking shit. Yeah. You know, they're breaking, you know, this guy's thing, that. So now those customers, their experience is already kind of tainted, right? Which is, you know, some of these guys are really weird about their kayaks. Like, they don't want a scratch on it or whatever, which makes no sense to me if you're a fisherman. that's like going to Africa and, like, saying, I don't want to get my feet dirty. Like, bro, what are you talking about?
You're in the desert in fucking Africa,
in the savannah or whatever. You're going to get dirty, bro. Anyway, so, you know, that stuff starts happening. We're able to still, you know, do things. But what made the Bahamas tournament this boom to me in, like, the kayak world was that first year we had two guys catch marlin. We had one guy, and which was actually an eligible catch and release fish for that tournament.
Blue marlin?
One guy caught a white and landed it. He ended up winning the division. We had another guy, Matt. We called him Marlin Matt ever since then. Fought a blue marlin.
Do you know how big?
And, dude, so here's the thing. He never got it, like, in the boat.
Right.
And, you know, he didn't win anything except loads of respect.
Yeah.
But, dude, he fought. The captain, Luther, of the boat wanted to harpoon the freaking thing for food that we were talking about, which we, you know, we couldn't let him do that for exposure and stuff.
Well, the Bahamas doesn't let you kill billfish.
See what I mean? Yeah, so.
It's like.
Dude.
Now, you're breaking the law
in the Bahamas? Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. You don't know if it's really a law. You don't know if they're really going to come after you. Or if they do, you're going to have to barter your way out of it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we're already. Like, you're already showing money, bro. Yeah. Listen, I'll put it this way. Like, the whole trip is bartering. Like, a guy will come up to you that works in the hotel, and he'll say, hey, I'll take care of all your shit. I'll make sure your room is, like, spick and span, all this stuff. Just give me a couple shirts. So, no, even if it's you're bartering. Yeah. They'll take a shirt. They'll take a fucking keychain, bro. These people that are.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Then we start finding stuff stolen. Now we're finding the box. So I had three boxes of shirts that were in my room to distribute.
Yeah.
Two of them are missing. And this is where I learned this the hard way. I know I'm jumping around, so it's probably confusing people. But it's all in the Bahamas, just so you know. So I end up going to, like, they have this, like, guy, Richard, who is our chaperone.
Okay.
So I go to Richard. I'm like, bro. We got back to our room. It's our second day here. I'm trying to plan this shit for day three. And we got two of our shirts just jacked. Yeah. Or not shirts, the boxes. Box. Hundreds of shirts. You know? And that's inventory for us, man. That's how we make our money.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm like, so come on, man. I'm already learning pretty quick here. You guys all know each other. Can you find me the fucking boxes?
Yeah.
You know? So he says, listen. So he takes me. He goes, I want you to talk to, like, the head chairman of the resort, and I'm going to show you something. And I'm like, okay. So he's nice, fancy office, right? I'm waiting for him with Richard, and Richard isn't, like, saying anything, you know? And I'm like, what is this about, you know? And all of a sudden, the guy comes, hey, guys, come on in, you know? Yeah. All cheerful, nice guy. Go in there. I sit down in these nice big chairs, right? He's got nice room, trophies, you know, family, all that stuff. And then I look to my left, and what do I see?
Your boxes.
One of the box of shirts. And that's when it hit me.
Did you have a conniption?
Do you say something?
Yeah, what did you do?
And cause a shit show? Or...
Oh, I would have lost it, dude. So like, is he stealing your shirts or like...
I was quiet. And here's the thing. You gotta know, and you gotta like look into the future and say to yourself, okay, they all know each other.
Yeah.
They're all connected with each other. If that chairman guy is going to make my trip and my customers more pleasant by giving them $500 worth of shirts, take it at this point.
Yeah.
I'm in a foreign place.
You don't want to mess with these guys.
I don't want to. They all know each other.
You might disappear.
All of them. I mean, the cook to the freaking, to the beggar guy out front, to the chairman.
Yeah.
They're all connected, man.
Right.
All of them. And that's when it hit me. Just make something up of why you wanted to see the guy. And Richard, and I'll never forget this, at the end of the meeting, I look over at Richard, and he looks at me, and he winks. Because he knew.
Yeah.
He knew the situation I was in. He knew. He brought me in there to show me this is how it is over here.
And you never got those shirts, did you?
Of course not. Dude, you can watch...
You didn't be like, those are mine?
You want to hear the funny thing? You know when I saw him again? On Shark Week.
The guy was on TV?
No. Some bohemian dude on a boat
was wearing
chasing a shark had my freaking shirt. I'm like, hey, you know what? At least they're being used for advertising.
There
right?
you go.
Dude, people were wearing them all over the island. I mean, it was hysterical.
Wow.
So that's just, you know, one scenario that happened.
So how do you protect yourself? Well, you don't go back anymore now. You're not doing that tournament. Or...
So the last...
You thinking about it?
So, well, here's what happened. So at the end, okay, so we 3-year contract's up.
Right.
With our third year, dude, we kicked ass. We filled up the resort. It got so popular that we literally had to have a cutoff because we couldn't take any more people.
Yeah.
And everyone was making money. They were, you know, the bohemians. We were all of sponsors.
Yeah.
We would have, like, owners of companies that sponsor us come and – fish the event.
Wow.
So now it's not just like these vacationer people from around the country. It's these business owners coming to try it out.
Right.
So that third year was amazing. And then the fourth year, so we negotiate. Now they're already pissed off because I won't sign another 3-year contract. I'm not going to get locked in. Because it was getting there at the time, their final year, the government was going over like a switch of whatever their president, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But from what we were hearing, it like wasn't good, right? And it was already getting more and more shady, you know, as we went. So the fourth year comes, and we end up signing the 1-year contract. And I think they knew that this was our last hurrah there.
Right.
So that final year, that fourth one, dude, they were one of my customers came to me the third day there, and he sits me down, okay? And he says, Joe, me and my wife, I think we're going to take a plane home. And I'm like, what happened, bro? He says, okay, you don't think like these rooms are bugged or anything? Dude, he was like sketched out.
Like they were videotaping him and his wife?
Well,
like...
listen to this. So I'm like, well, what happened, bro? He goes, well, we wanted to go check out some of the shops. They had this like area where you can – the buses would go and stuff like that. You could take a taxi, whatever.
Yeah.
And but at night it like closes down and you could instantly see it turn into like a freaking slum, you know, dangerous gangs coming out, guys with matching bohemian shirts and shit, like packing knives and stuff. Like, so you would see the change.
Yeah.
So once all those American people were like out, it would flip.
Right.
And so he is all like sketched out. And he says, dude, we got a taxi at night to go to that place. We wanted to hang out and see what it was like. So we get in the taxi, and we're driving, and now it's an hour later. And he's like, bro, like, where is this place? It's been an hour. The taxi driver turns around, and he says, give me $500. And him and his wife are like, no. And the taxi guy says, you're with the Extreme Bunch, right? He's like, yeah. He goes, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Look over there. He looks over, and there's this, like, slum area. with like gangs, just scary, he said. And, you know, this is his wife's like this little white blonde, you know, he's some like, you know, he works for like a bank and, you know, I mean.
They're not street people. No, they're not ready to scrap.
Not at all. Not at all. And yeah, man. And he says that if he didn't give him $500, he would just leave him in that place. So long story short, he ended up giving him $500 and he took him back to the resort.
Whoa.
And they never went out. And then I was fuming. So I went to Richard, and Richard, once again, now we're in this little room that he's staying in. And he goes, "You need to sit down." So I like sit down, and I, you know, him and I were like in screaming matches before, but this is where I knew it was serious. He wasn't yelling at me. And with Richard, over the years, I figured out if he's pissed and not yelling at you, it's a serious situation.
Yeah.
And that's when he says to me, "Joe, look around you. We all know each other. We all do things to benefit our families." And he goes, "Do you think you coming to me is doing anything? Anything?" And I go, "No, you're right." And then he goes, "Look out that door." Dude, so he's got these old drapes there, you know. I look out the drapes. And the security guards that have been there, he's got two security guards there. And one of them has a gun and he's just holding it, looking at me.
So they were like, "We're going to fuck you up."
Without saying it.
If you, what? If you mess with them or like?
I think he just was threatening me to chill out because, dude, that final year was a complete mess. They were fucking with us nonstop because they knew. They knew we weren't coming back. And it was a threat. You know, I went back to my room. He let me go, you know, and I knew. I called my dad. I'm like, "Dude, I can't wait for this trip to be over."
Yeah, you know? that was it.
And that was it, man, you know. And, you know, people got to understand, like, when you're in a place like that, you know, there is no real police. There is no real anything. Everything is kind of just, like, fake and visually there for that Americanized vacation feel. Yeah. But, dude, once the lights go out.
Different story.
It's a different world, bro.
That's crazy, man.
Different world. Dude, they had a hut where you would get out of the bus, and we only caught on to this the third year. And you would see, they'd have this little bar, and these people are dancing in the bar, and they're playing bohemian music and this and that. So I end up leaving my phone in the bus. So me and my buddy Fred run back to get my phone, right? Yeah. All the people are outside the bus now. And we look, and I look over at the little bar that's there. It's closed. It's boarded up. I'm like, "Dude, am I seeing things? Am I in like another dimension?" So like they have like a slit in a window there because they had a board. You look through the window, and the one girl's like smoking a cigarette in there. And like the place totally changed. It was fake.
No way.
The people like having drinks at the bar, the lady dancers. It was all a show to make you feel when you arrive that party, you know, one love, you know, like feel, right?
Yeah. Damn, dude.
Dude. So this is the stuff that really goes on in the back end of doing stuff like this. And to finish this story, the final nail in the coffin, we go to leave.
Yeah.
So we're leaving. And now I'm freaking relieved, bro. I'm in the best mood now. I'm like, oh, God, we're out of here, you know. We made it.
Yeah.
And the ship's leaving, right? And as the ship is leaving, you're looking at the land, right, moving like this, right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I see kayak, 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 kayak. They fucking left the fucking kayaks, bro, like ransom.
Really? They took all of them?
Half.
Jeez. Yeah. Were they riding them? Is that what you saw?
No, they're just sitting there on the dock.
Oh.
Like they never loaded them onto the ship.
They're like, "Screw you guys."
As like a final, you know, punishment.
Middle finger to you guys.
For me not going there and giving them envelopes of cash anymore. So anyway, that was my, yes, the guys did get their kayaks back.
Oh, they did.
They did. When we got back, we really made a stink about that. Yeah. Plus, some of the guys were not from the state. So now they have to stay an extra day, 2 days, 3 days in a hotel and spend more money to wait for their fucking kayaks, you know. But when they got them back, a lot of them were like beat up. You know, like some guy kicked it, shit, yeah. You know, just pissed off, you know. And that, you know, that's pretty much how it ended. But I will say this to close that story. It was an experience in my life that I needed.
You learned life lessons.
Dude, not just life lessons, but as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, as an event coordinator, that event made me, it aged me 10 years, but it also made me so much stronger and solid when it comes to like shit that happens here.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because I'll always say, whenever something happens, my wife and I always go, that's nothing, man.
Yeah.
Try going to the fucking Bahamas and doing an event, you know?
That's different story.
It's not even in this realm. Yeah. You know, the shit that we saw.
People don't realize that.
They don't realize it, bro. They really don't. So.
Well, that's crazy, man.
That's our Bahamas extreme story. Well, a lot of people don't know.
That's nuts, dude.
Yeah.
Well, on the bright side, your tournaments are going well here in the States.
Yeah.
And then that's
we're still
all
here, man. You know, for decades. Good. And we're still here. So it's we're going into our 13th year, bro.
Nice. Good for you, man.
Yeah, 13th.
Awesome.
So it's pretty crazy. I would have never thought, you know, that doing something that I love, that just something on a whim from a Discovery Channel show would turn into what I've created. You know, people that I'm still friends with to this day, you know, sponsors that I still am also friends with, to the relationships,
right?
The things that I've learned, how to deal with people, how to communicate with people. You know, it's you can't even explain it, because it's just so massive,
right,
inside of you, and what it does to you, you know, to it changes you.
I'm sure.
You know, literally changes you.
I'm sure, man.
You know, and then, you know, that brings us to avenues of other things, you know. So now, you know, I have a show. It's not my show. Nautical Ventures, my sponsor, owns a show on Fox Sports.
Yeah, you're a co-host on
Radio,
that.
Yeah, called The Weekly Fisherman Show.
Nice.
Eric is the main host. I'm his co-host. And Steven's our awesome tech guy. And I'll tell you, man, that show is awesome. And again, you know, I'm learning on the fly, you know, because I've always been a good host when it comes to like in front of people on stage.
Right.
I had a small podcast for a while, which actually I should do again.
You should, man.
Dude, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
What was it
man.
Called?
It was called Raw H2O. So
okay.
It was everything
cool.
Aquatic. Dude, we had a guy from Transylvania that caught a mermaid on the show and had pictures and
a mermaid,
fucking mermaid, bro.
Mermaids, what?
Mermaids are real,
dude. I want to see that.
Yeah. Maybe that'll be for another show.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, like we had crazy guests.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was something I did for fun again. And then, you know, all that stuff kind of led to them approaching me saying, "Hey, do you want to be on Fox?"
Right.
I'm like, what?
Hell yeah.
Fuck yeah, man. What am I gonna do? And they're like, yeah, you know, we're gonna do a fishing show, yada yada, and I need you to replace another guy that was on there. We want to get more millennials,
right?
We want a younger demographic,
yeah.
So they brought me on for that, and you know, here we are today, still
there
rocking.
There you go,
man. It was like 2 years ago.
That's freaking awesome.
Yeah,
good
yeah.
for you, dude.
So, and then I have my training company, personal training company.
There you go.
Training
so
with
you
Joe
got a lot going
all.
On. You're a busy. A
lot
man.
Going on, bro. I'm like a one man show, dude. I'm doing the social media, the you know, the whole branding part of it, the everything, you know. We got a good team, you know, that are awesome. But, you know, the nitty-gritty, you know, my wife and I. And I got to say, my wife on the back end is outstanding, dude. She's
– hell, yeah.
Without her, man, she's like the spine.
Yeah.
So, like, if the spine crumbles, like, the whole thing just drops.
Right.
You know, like skin.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the skin. She's the fucking skeleton, bro.
She holds it all together.
She holds it all together.
Well, dude, I appreciate you taking the time then out of your day to come down here and you know, talk to me. And dude, it was an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, this is great. Dude.
Yeah, man,
yeah,
this
thanks
was sweet.
For having me on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Maybe we'll talk mermaids
next time.
Next time.
Yeah, for sure, man. Well, guys, you guys got to check out Extreme Kayak Fishing. You guys got to check out his show on Fox Sports, The Weekly Fisherman.
Yeah,
right?
Weekly Fisherman Show. Yeah.
There you go. And then if you want to get big like him, go check him out for his training, guys. All right. Thanks, Joe.
Hey,
I appreciate
man.
It.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us on CCO's The Science of Fishing. We hope that this episode was helpful and you learned something for the next time you're wetting a line. Before we cast off, a special thanks to our sponsors, Sea Mule and Black Reef Co. Stay hooked by following us on social media at Science of Fishing and hitting the subscribe button. And if you know someone who'd enjoy this, don't hesitate to share. Until we meet again, catch 'em up.